meter. Its designation, the Halo. Lozen takes his time walking through the fortress. Fur-matted Wookiees and corroded droids work as he passes, many cutting thick planks of rosher wood to fortify the stronghold. That wood is damn near supernatural in terms of the protections it affords. It refuses to burn. It can take hits from a turbo laser and suffer only a little charring and splintering. Of course, that means cutting the stuff takes proton teeth saw blades. And even those break in contest with the wood. Many a Wookiee has had his head split in half like a Tongo nut by one snapping in mid-spin. The Wookiees do not look at him as he passes. They have been trained not to turn their animal gaze toward him. And the inhibitor chips bolted to the backs of their skulls ensure that any violation results in varying levels of misery, escalating, of course, until paralysis and then death. His feet splash in puddles as he walks from level to level, down one set of steps to another, around a wooden walkway, across a planking of sheet metal, through a longhouse of painted forest troopers readying their blaster rifles for target practice. Out here, the air smells of ash and char and burning hair. Clouds turn and twirl overhead, gray and dead as a diseased lung. There, ahead, waiting at the bottom of the rusted metal steps, the visitor. Classic stiff-backed imperial posture. Chin up, nose down, hands behind the back. The uniform shows a naval banding. Just a lieutenant. A man of little significance. The man offers a wan smile that lifts a mustache far too sculpted for this brutish world. Lozen's own beard is unkempt, unruly, a wild thatch scrub growing from his cheeks and jowls. Even O'Dare's face is a patchy rug of dark stubble. Mad men for a mad place. The Imperial salutes, then offers a hand. "Lieutenant Joran Turnbull," the man says. Lozen does not take the man's hand, or offer much acknowledgement at all. He does little more than twist his face into a dissatisfied scowl. "Sloan sent you, I'm told."
"That is correct, sir."
"Why?"
"She understands you're having some, problems."
"And the Empire wants to help."
"We are all the Empire, sir."
"Are we?"
Lozen growls, then steps up to the man. O'Dare closes in, too. He is strung tight like a bow cable, ready for anything. The warlord gets into the lieutenant's face and bares his teeth. The man is small, and Lozen is large. He's let himself gain size over the last many years, filling himself with bulk, fat and muscle wreathing his bones. His beard is long, yes, but his hair is pulled back in a knotty snarl. He is everything this tall, thin man is not.
"You have abandoned us. Gone is our resupply. Our slave stock is building up, and nobody is taking them off our hands. We'll have to cut breeding lines before too long. We've seen no changing of the guard, no passing the baton for our ships, or our craft, or our officers. It is as if we are forgotten. But we remember, and we survive."
The man looks nervous now, as he should. He may die before this day is done.
"Grand Admiral Sloan surely begs your forgiveness in this regard. As you may know, the Empire has fractured since the Emperor's death."
"The Emperor is alive!"
Lozen seethes. It is a lie. He knows it to be one. And yet it's one he props up. The story he tells his men and women here is simple, because simple is effective. The Empire has been robbed from its Emperor, and one day he will reclaim it. Until then, they are on their own. It gives his soldiers a future. It gives them an end. It whispers of victory.
"Yes, of course."
The Imperial visibly swallows, He knows now that the rope coils around his neck and tightens ineluctably. Just the same, Sloane is extending a hand. You are menaced by terrorists? Lozen's eyes narrow into fat, pinched slits.
Yes. We know who they are. Ah, we think. They came to this world with a stolen code from an Imperial prison maker. Golar Saram.
That is correct.
Never trust a Cynatine. A brain that large contains a multitude of treacheries.
That holds true here. The terrorists arrived with those codes and under the false blessing of Admiral Sloane.
Lozen leans in.
Who are they?
Imperial hunters sent by the New Republic, led by a known scumraker, the criminal Han Solo. Now a general in their ranks.
Lozen nods. That makes sense.
Interesting. The one we have hasn't talked. Would not let a single word slip past his vile rebel lips, no matter how much we hurt him.
Do you still have him? Is he alive, the prisoner?
The governor snorts.
He is.
He holds up a finger and loops it in a lasso gesture.
Bring me the captive, Odair.
His attaché goes away and returns shortly with a short cage on grav pads. Odair nudges it along with his knee. The cage is too short for a human. It's an iron kennel meant for one of Lozen's Striga, a blunt-beaked harrier bird, big as a dog and a powerful hunter. Trainable, too, with the right motivation. But this cage contains no such bird. Rather, it contains a man. This man belongs here. His eyes are wild like the forests of this place. He is rangy and savage, an undomesticated cur. The Imperial stoops to look. His face tightens as he sees.
This one, he's missing an eye.
We loosened that eye, thinking it would loosen his tongue.
Lozen growls mucus up out of his throat and into his mouth and chews on it.
It did not.
He spits the phlegm against the ground. Spat.
Well, your methods are your own. I could use a tour of your...
Just then, someone hands something to Odair. A hollow screen. Odair's gaze flits to the Imperial, then to the screen, then to Lozen.
Governor, you should see this.
Odair sidles over and hands him the hollow screen. On the screen, a series of wanted posters. This, he realizes, is the team of Imperial hunters that is plaguing him and his domain. He sees the man that is kept in the cage. A commando, looks like. John Burrell is his name. Thing is, he recognizes another face on there, too. Syngiarath Velus. It is the face of the Imperial in front of him. Oh, sure, the man has endeavored to change a little about himself. Hair a bit longer, and not to mention that overgroomed caterpillar crawling on his upper lip. But that, without a doubt, is not Joran Turnbull, if such a man even exists. He is an intruder. He is prey. Lozen feels his blood go hot.
What a wondrous reversal.
This man thought he could hunt the governor. But now this fool has gotten himself caught in a bind. And he senses it, too. Some prey is too dumb to know. But the best prey, the kind you want to hunt for the challenge it presents, can sense when the wind has changed, when a predator stalks the wild. The man tenses. His gaze flits because he's looking for a weapon or an exit or any advantage he can manage. But he's too slow. Lozen has a knife in his hand, a Kashak blade, a Wookiee weapon. The name translates roughly to Bramblethorn.
The beasts use them for eating. They pry open the shells of various crustaceans and bugs. But Lozen has found the blades to be elegantly balanced. So balanced, in fact, he throws it! The traitor turns to flee. The blade lands true. It sticks in the back of the man's calf, crippling his leg. His prey, Singier, whatever his name is, falls forward, catching himself with open palms. His foe howls like a wounded deer.
Bring him to me!
Lozen barks to Odair. His attaché complies. Burned bone chimes tink and tonk in the unstill air. As Jazz sets up her rifle, snapping the scope on, one of the crew behind her, Greybok, the one-armed Wookiee, bumps something, and it rolls past her. A toy. A child's toy. It is a wooden saurian with wheels instead of legs, and as it rolls, its jaw squeaks opened and closed. She wonders how long it's been since a Wookiee youngling has played with it. That youngling might now be older, or dead. A shadow falls over her. Chewbacca stands staring out into the mist. He looks up, too, like he's equal parts sad and afraid. He chuffs and barks. Solo hunkers down next to her.
We'll keep our eyes peeled.
What did he say?
She asks him.
You don't want to know.
She screws the thermal imaging module onto the side of the scope.
I'm a big girl. I can handle it.
He said to watch out for spiders.
Spiders don't frighten me.
She thinks they sure frighten Singier, though. Even a teeny tiny house spider running across the floor will have him freeze in place, saying a prayer to 100 gods he doesn't believe in. It occurs to her suddenly, she misses Singier. Solo leans in.
Spiders don't frighten you because most spiders are no bigger than your hand. These spiders, web weavers, big as you and me.
That's horrifying.
What's more horrifying is what they do to you.
She blinks.
You're right. I don't want to know.
The Wookiees eat them. Chewie says they're, well, chewy.
Chewie yips in agreement. Just the same, she looks over her shoulder, half expecting to see some massive scuttling thing coming up fast. But all she sees back there is the halo and the team they brought on board. A ragtag crew of battle-hardened Wookiee refugees, plus a smattering of smugglers. That includes two of Greybok's friends, Hatchet and Palabar. It's Palabar who helped them conceive of this plan. The Corran is utter poo-doo in a fight. Even the whisper of threat leaves him cowering and praying. But he's tech-savvy and smart, when he can see past his own fear. The crew is doing what they're supposed to, anchoring massive eye bolts into the wood with pneumohammers. The wood resists, but the Wookiees know the weak spots. Once the eye bolts are in, they start threading through the jump cables. Everything is going according to plan. Her mind drifts back to Singier and Jom, and she feels suddenly less relaxed. But there's no time for that distraction. Everyone has to do their part, her included. Jazz leans in and tucks the scope against her eye. It's comfortable. Sitting behind a gun is always comfortable for her. That probably says something unhealthy about her, but she doesn't care. Solo flips the thermal imaging switch.
Thanks,
she says, as the dead mist below suddenly flares with colors and contours. There. Camp Sardo, far below. The shape of a lumbering thing roams into view. An AT-AT walker slowly stomping along the perimeter. From up here, she can't even feel the vibrations of its feet. That's how high they are. She sees the great blob of life down there. Wookiees and forest troopers and the officers who belong to Lozen Tolruk's demonic regime.
You see it?
Solo asks.
Not yet.
Here, give me the rifle.
I have it, she whispers. Patience, Solo.
He yanks back his hand as if bitten.
Hey, all right, all right. But put a little thrust in it, will you?
He looks up at Chewie.
How we doing, Chewie?
Chewbacca rumbles a reply.
Inhibitor frequency is still up, Solo says. But it could be down any minute. Come on, Amari, find the damn...
I found it, she says.
The shield generator gives off its own heat signature, and it's one of the taller structures in Camp Sardo. A dodecahedral tower on 4 steel posts. It controls the field that surrounds the camp. A field that Imperials can pass through without harm, but any chip that passes through it will detonate. Meaning, if a Wookiee waltzes through the field, boom. Unfortunately, it's an entirely separate mechanism from the inhibitor frequency, which means it has to go separately. But it can't go too early. They blow that field too early, and they'll set off alarms. That could compromise their plan.
I hope your pair can handle this, Solo growls.
Sinjir has it handled.
The commando, your boy toy there. He wasn't supposed to get captured.
She hesitates.
I hope he's all right. He also saved our hides and let us get away from that ambush. A fact I hope you appreciate.
Yeah, yeah.
He shifts impatiently.
And that explosive slug of yours will take that whole thing down? You sure about that?
It will,
she growls through clamped teeth.
Longer we sit up here, the bigger the target on our backs.
She gives him a look.
You need to trust us.
Yeah, yeah, relax. I trust Sinjir. I'm just on edge. And I trust you enough to take the shot when the frequency goes dead.
Me?
She smirks.
I thought you were Mr. Crackshot around here. The scoundrel with the luck of the Force on his side.
Here, how about this? We tell the world that I'm a better shot with a blaster, and you're a better shot with a rifle. We'll call it a draw.
She nods, says,
That's fair.
She likes Solo after all this, even with his boyish impatience. He gives off a vibe that floats somewhere between a sharp-tongued cad and a dim-witted oaf. But at the end of the day, there's something genuinely good about him. She likes to hope he sees the same in her.
All right, he says. Stay frosty, just in case we...
The mist around him lights up with a single laser spearing the air.
Good company.
He finishes, and then pivots on his heel with one blaster already up and in his hand. He yells to Jazz.
Stay here with Chewie. Get ready for the shot. We'll hold him off.
Coming up out of the mist behind them, and above, and below them, forest troopers in camouflaged armor. Everything lights up with the exchange of blaster fire. And Jazz hunkers down, jaw tight, trying not to die. John Burrell is in his cage, his one eye gone, and the men responsible are out there right now, about ready to kill Sinjirath Velis. He didn't recognize his crewmate at first. Having one eye didn't help, but Sinjir disappeared into the role of some needy bureaucrat. Tolruk bought it too. That ex-Imperial is good at his job. John Burrell appreciates those who are good at their jobs. Right now, though, Sinjir is also about to be good at getting his hind end handed to him by Lozen Tolruk's brute, Odair. John bangs against the cage, growling like an animal, his voice like two stones grinding together.
Get up! Get up, Wrath Velis, you bloody sack of meat!
Odair advances. Sinjir moves fast, rolling over and pinwheeling a kick with his good leg. Odair doesn't see it coming. The kick knocks him down to the ground. Others gather around. Men of Tolruk's with mud on their cheeks and calloused hands. Women with leering stares, hungry for violence. Fights erupt here in the fortress from time to time. Sometimes they even make Jom fight, usually with one hand tied behind his back, because even half-blind, he still put his attackers in the dirt. All around, Tolruk's people hoot and call with the atavistic urgings of a primitive species. The two men scrap. Odair crashes an elbow against Sinjir's collarbone, but Sinjir bends back and fetches the blade from his own leg. It squishes and squirts a line of blood as he claims the knife as his own. It's an opportunity, though, and Odair takes it, dropping a fist into his foe's gut again and again. It falls like the head of a hammer. Wham! Wham! It goes on like this for a while, the two men pummeling each other, the knife passing between them, the blade never drawing any more blood. Tolruk watches with eagerness, picking his teeth with a chipped thumbnail. John watches Tolruk. He thinks,
soon as I'm out of here, you're a dead man, Tolruk.
He's dreamed of taking the man's eye as vengeance for his own. When he was captured, the crew had been running the same two-prong approach that they started that day with the command station on the other side of Kashyyyk. Jom and his ground team did their commando recon business, in this case trying to secure a shuttle platform in order to grab an Imperial ride that would get them safely out to Tolruk's Island. But they were ambushed. Turns out they'd pulled the same trick too many times and gotten cozy with it. So did the local Imperials. Jom's team of Wookiees got away, but he wasn't so lucky. They captured him and brought him here. And that's where they cut out his eye. Suddenly, Tolruk applauds. Jom looks and sees Odair finally get behind Sinjir. The brute pulls his arm tight around Rath Velis's throat. Eyes bulge, tongue wags.
Come on, Sinjir! Give him hell! Fight! Fight!
The knife drops from Sinjir's hand and clatters to the ground. And with that, it's done. The crowd cheers. Jom slumps against the cage. His one chance at freedom, over. They shouldn't have sent Sinjir. Odair spits out a pair of teeth, then drags the ex-Imperial over by his heel. Panting, he says,
Here he is, Governor.
Sinjir rolls over. Jom winces. The man's a bloody, bruised, dark mess. The side of his face is swelling up like a balloon. His nose might be broken, and blood spackles that twisted mustache. Sinjir licks his lips.
I'll be fine in a second. Then we can go for... He grimaces and grunts. Round two.
Tolruk lords over him, scratching his belly.
Why would you come here? Into the heart of it. Into my lair. Do you think me prey?
Not at all. Just looking to borrow a cup of sugar, love.
You came for your friend, then. The one-eyed man.
No, not that either, actually. I came for your...
Here he coughs so hard, it sounds like he might shatter a rib doing it.
Your control module.
A lantern of hope alights inside Jom's chest. At that, Tolruk barks laughter. The control module is how they program and control the chips in each of the Wookiees. It controls literally hundreds of thousands of chips. Jom's seen it. It's old tech, practically Clone Wars era. Tolruk probably barely understands how it works.
You idiot! I would never have let you get near that, no matter who you claim to be. The control module remains in my control only.
And yet...
More coughing.
It doesn't.
He frowns.
You are a sad, delusional little man.
Probably, but not about this, I'm afraid.
Sinjir sits up. One eye now is sealed shut behind a tomb of swollen flesh.
See, You checked me for weapons at the door, but you did not check my boots. I've got a hyperwave transceiver spike hidden in my heel. And, so sorry, your precious console is of the transmitting variety. Totally wireless. An old security flaw, but one that remains mostly uncorrected across the Empire. I should know.
You didn't. You couldn't have.
I didn't need to be at the console to hack it. I just needed to be near it. Oh, of course, I also needed enough time for the remote hack to work, which I think you've given me enough just about now.
The datapad in Tolrok's left hand begins to flash red. The alarm. Now it's Jom's turn to bellow with laughter. He bangs his heels against the cage, cackling madly. To Odair, Tolrok screams,
"Kill the intruder! Kill him!"
A laser lances through the air, and Jazz hears it hit flesh. And next to her, one of the Wookiees, Hargan, topples off the platform. His body tumbles down into the mist, massive tree trunk arms pinwheeling. Every centimeter of Jazz wants to get up and take the fight to the troopers. They're surrounded now on damn near every side. They've got troopers behind them. And an LAIT, a low-altitude Imperial transport, keeps making flybys. The troopers within firing on them as they pass. On the latest pass, Chewie takes aim with a bowcaster, and the air sizzles as he clips one of the forest troopers right in the visor. The visor shatters, and the body rolls out of the transport, falling through the air and joining Hargan in death. But Jazz can't get up. She has her shot lined up. All she needs is... Chewie roars! The inhibitor frequency is dead! The chips are off, planet-wide! The revolt begins here and now, with the pull of her trigger. Her finger twitches, and the slug thrower bucks against her shoulder. Above Camp Sarda, a thunderclap explosion. Fire rains down in streams, and bits of the shield generator slam against the ground, crushing troopers underneath. Metal burns. Smoke rises. Around old Arathaka, the mist pulses with what looks like red lightning. The shield is down. All around, Wookiees climb the towers, crawling on top of buildings, swarming over their troopers. A trio of them offer thunderous roars as they wrench a turret out of its mooring. Not far away, two Wookiees grab for one of the forest trooper guards. Each takes an end, and they twist. The trooper's spine snaps as his body corkscrews. They rage, fur and fangs and swiping limbs. Men screaming. In the distance, something explodes. Fire jets into the air. The beasts ululate. They are free. Fire blooms like a flower in the mist as the shield generator goes down. Around Jazz, the Wookiees roar and raise their arms and weapons in triumph. A small moment of victory before the next phase begins. Already Han is clipping himself onto one of the cables. He throws an anchor line to Chewie, who loops the cable around him and hooks it into his belt.
You good?
Han says to Jazz, flinching as a laser bolt cooks the air behind his head. He growls and returns fire. A trooper scream cuts through the mist, and she sees a shape fall.
I'm good.
We're almost there,
he says, his hand on her shoulder.
See you on the other side of this, Amari.
Good working with you, Sora.
To Chewie, he says,
come on, pal. Let's go steal us an Imperial Walker.
Then he and Chewbacca take a running leap off the platform. The two figures disappear over the edge, and then the other Wookiees join them. One by one, they leap boldly off the end of the platform. Arms and legs splayed out as they dive through the mist toward the vile Camp Sardo. Cables trailing like umbilical cords. That leaves her with her command crew. Greybok, Hatchet, and Palabar. three ex-prisoners from Severkos who joined Solo's mission on a fluke. Hatchet claims she doesn't want to be here. Keeps saying things like,
I wanted to get away from prison planets, not take a vacation on one.
But then Greybox silences him with violent one-armed shaking. Calabar mostly just quivers and peeks out from behind his hands. They're the dregs of this team. Good thing Jazz likes the dregs. Already they're waving her toward the halo. A pair of forest troopers come up a long spiraling ramp. One is already on her. So she cracks him hard enough with the butt of her gun that his helmet spins. The other gets a point-blank shot to the chest plate. It splits in half, and he goes down, his armor shattered and smoldering as he twitches. Hatchet waves her onto the halo.
This is all going too good, he says. It's gonna balance out the other way, Zabrak. Just you watch. Can't go nice forever. Shut up and man the guns,
she tells him, then hops in the halo and kicks the thrusters into gear. They thunder to life, and the ship lifts into the air. Time to go rescue her friends. Everything is pulsing like a pounding heart. Sinjir gags as the man's hands wrap around his throat. Tolruk's attaché glares down with bloodshot eyes, a mad grin spreading across his face like a pool of spilling oil set aflame. Sinjir's hand swats uselessly at the man, then paws along the ground, feeling for the knife. A knife he knows can't be too far away. There! He has it! His fingers tickling the face of the hilt, and as darkness sucks at the edges of his vision, he tries to pull it close. Closer? Oh! A miscalculation. It spins out of his reach. Then, a shadow falls over him. Death, he decides. It is the specter of the end coming to claim him. He has part of it right. It is death, yes, but it hasn't come for him. One of the Wookiees brings the flat end of a circular saw blade against the side of Odair's head. Odair cries out and tumbles to the side. The Wookiee takes one stride, straddling the man. Then he flings the saw blade to the side and reaches to grab the man's arms. The freed slave begins to pull, pull, pull. Odair screams. Then comes the sound like branches breaking. It is a sound that fails to disturb him, for he knows its ilk well. The sounds of pain were once his song. No time to think about that now. Now it is time to move. He scrambles onto his hands and knees, only now regarding the chaos around him. Troopers are storming onto the scene, firing blasters. But the Wookiees, now freed, are not easily cowed by that. They roar and rage and rush Tolruk's men. A trooper flies through the air over Sinjir's head, arms pinwheeling as he hits the log walls with a dull crunch. The knife. Sinjir's hand finds it. And he finally gets back onto his feet. Unsteadily, for his entire body feels like it's been passed through the gastrointestinal tract of a Gundark. And he dives toward Jom's cage. He uses the knife to pick the lock. Jom, for his part, watches silently, chest heaving. A moment of sympathy plucks at Sinjir's strings. The man really is missing an eye. His left. And it was removed without elegance. The socket is just a ragged pucker, a crass asterisk of ill-stitched skin. No signs of infection, at least. That's something. The lock springs. The cage pops open. Burrell grunts.
I don't feel so good.
You don't look so good either, if you take my meaning.
Sinjir winks and points to one of his eyes.
Are you drunk?
Regrettably, no.
It's like something clicks in Jom's head. He grabs Sinjir by the arm and pulls him forward.
Come on, Rathbelus. Let's go find Tolruk and make him eat that knife.
No,
Sinjir says.
We have to go, Jom. Jazz is coming.
Or she should be, if everything else is going according to plan. The commando pulls him close, even as violence unfolds around them.
That man, he took my eye, Sinjir. Cut it out of my head while he was high as a wind turbine, drunk on some kind of tree sap. Then he threw my eye into a campfire. I heard it pop and sizzle. He has to pay for all his crimes. The ones against me. The ones against these Wookiees.
You're angry.
I have gone beyond the margins of angry.
Sinjir looks around. Tolrok is nowhere to be found. The deranged governor has fled the scene. Sinjir knows how this works. Jom will go and do this no matter what he says. The question now is whether or not Sinjir will join him. And that, of course, is no question at all. Debts must be paid. Tolrok awaits, Sinjir says, grimacing.
Shall we?
It's like a giant thermal detonator primed and gone pop. Beneath the halo, Jazz sees that freedom has come to Kashyyyk. Wookiees, immediately free of the inhibitor field that suppressed their minds from the chips embedded in the back of their heads, are raging. They scale the towers of Camp Sardo. They rip at tents. They swarm over AT-ST chicken walkers, tipping them over so they crash against the ground. The forest troopers flee as Wookiees claim blasters, mount turrets, and begin to overwhelm their captors. They outnumber the Imperials by 10-1. Easy. It won't be like this everywhere. Not yet. Many of the settlements are still contained by suppression fields. The Wookiees there are still imprisoned. But with their chips cooked, they will be able to push back and claim their prisons for themselves. And not every Wookiee is in a settlement. The revolt has begun. Greybok grumbles. Hatchet leans in toward Jazz, his shriveled Weequay face wearing a dubious mask.
He says the planet has had its revolutions before, you know. This one will stick, she says.
She hopes.
Need better.
Palabar points. There, as she swoops the halo low over the action, firing at troopers who are mounting guns on turrets, she sees the towering shape of the AT-AT walker ahead. The top of its cockpit is cracked open, and a familiar Wookiee is flinging the driver off into the air. Chewie waves. Solo gives her a salute from below as he slides into the opening. The refugees, Karatha and the others, walk on the back of the AT-AT like conquering Doom Riders. The halo burns sky as it blasts forward. Soon the settlement of Camp Sardo is aft. Jazz weaves the ship through the Rorschach trees. Ahead, a pair of LAITs come blasting through the mist. Hatchet surprises them with a rain of red lasers. One transport's wing peels away and eclipses the second transport. Both spin down through the mist. Fog pulses with twin explosions. Ahead, the mist thins, and one of Kashyyyk's coastlines emerges. A dark sea, the white-capped tides cutting lines across the water. Beyond that, the halo's scopes show a rocky island. That's Tolrok's fortress. A massive, log-walled monstrosity built on the cusp of a long-dead volcano.
Shall we soften them up before we set her down?
Hatchet asks. She shrugs.
Why not? Light it up.
Hatchet grins and fires up the weapon system. He cackles.
It's over,
Lozen Tolrok slurs.
The hunt has ended.
The warlord sits in his throne, slumping forward. Sap is sticky around his fingers and his lips. Jom has the thorn knife in his hand, and he has the urging of a storm in him. But Sinjir stays him with a gentle gesture. Wait, he says.
Sinjir.
To the governor, Sinjir says,
You are coming with us.
Sent you here?
This is what we do, John. We hunt the Imperials. We capture them and take them. He's taking a ride with us. He presses a hand against John's chest. We're not killers.
How strange that sounds coming out of his mouth. John's one good eye closes. His chest rises and falls. The heaving breath of a man trying to contain his fury. That eye opens again.
Fine. Lozad Tolruk, you're under arrest by authority of the New Republic.
It doesn't matter,
Tolruk says, bubbles fizzing at his lips. His eyes search the space around them, but they don't seem to focus.
We're all dead. You, and all the Wookiees, even me. Oh, dead.
What? Sinjir asks. Speak sense, you slobbering blob.
If I can't have this world, then nobody can. Not the New Republic, not the Wookiees, certainly not the Empire.
The ground shudders.
What was that?
John asks. Another boom.
Orbital bombardment,
Tolruk says with a sloppy grin. Those two words drawn out drunkenly.
Annihilation from the stars. Or rather, from the Star Destroyers. I sent the code. Nothing is to survive.
Sinjir whispers to Jom.
We have to move now.
But he...
Leave him. I know when a man is broken.
Jom concedes. The two of them peel away, fleeing Tolruk's chambers. The man's gabbling laugh follows them as they go. A triumvirate of Star Destroyers floats in the slate-gray sky. Gauzy shapes hanging there above Kashyyyk like executioner blades. And destruction rains from those ships as they earn their name. Death comes in shrieking flame and shrieking light. It comes from the shuddering batteries of turbo lasers. It comes from the bellies of the beasts, dropped as propulsion bombs. It is clumsy and brutal, an act of killing like spraying a hive of wasps with a flamethrower. Imprecise, yes, but over time, effective. Jazz steps out the side door of the halo and takes a moment to watch as the ships, far off for now, fire on the planet below with their massive, world-scouring weapons. The ground shakes just slightly, even here. Soon, she knows, the ships will come this way. Centimeters from her head, a laser bolt cracks against the side of her ship. She flinches as it brings her back into the moment. They landed the halo smack dab in the center of the fortress, taking out a couple of bolt throwers and the troopers operating them as it found its landing zone. Now, as troopers rush to greet them with screaming blasters, all they can do is hold off the swarm of Tolruk's men, hoping like hell that Sinjir and Jom show. Hatchet is by her side now, and he's got Jom's heavy cannon, a Blastech DSK loaded with steel-melting dragon's fire cells. The Weequay refugee bellows and hoots, spraying the incoming troopers with green fire. A shaggy shape darts forward off to the side. It's Greybop. A blade gleams in his lone hand. She sees the scythe-like swoop of a reek blade. He howls some battle cry in the Shriwook tongue and begins slicing and dicing troopers like they're nothing but paper to be cut into dolls. Bits of armor fling and fly. A helmet tumbles to the ground, its head still in it.
Greybok is having a good time!
Hatchet yells over the din.
Just look for the others,
she answers.
Come on, where are you?
in the distance, the three Star Destroyers begin to drift apart, each likely going on a separate bombardment course. It'll take a long while to bomb this world into submission with just three of those ships. But in the meantime, the death they cause will be unparalleled. And who truly will stop them? An ill feeling leeches at her guts. Their success in liberating this planet will do them no good if the result is blowing it all to hell. There! Hatchet growls and lays down covering fire as Sinjir and Jom come bolting out through a wooden archway. Behind them, forest troopers storm after in close pursuit. Jazz reaches on her belt, pulls a detonator, primes it, and pitches it. The orb flies, beeping as it goes. It lands at the feet of the troopers. Gotcha, she thinks. It's fire and spinning bodies as the detonator goes off. The wave of concussion almost lifting Sinjir and Jom off their feet. But the two stagger and keep hurtling forward. As they reach the halo, Jazz helps them aboard.
Hello, honey. I'm home,
Sinjir says, giving her a wink.
I found this poor orphan, and I thought we could adopt him.
Amari,
Jom says, giving her a nod.
Your eye, she says.
It's gone. Her hand moves to his cheek, fingers searching out the crude stitching.
Didn't think I could get any prettier, did you? Proved you wrong again.
He leans in, gives her a peck.
Let's get this bird flying before hell rains down on us from those Star Destroyers, eh?
Tolruk sits, laughing at nothing. He is barely aware of the shape standing before him. His eyes blurry, strained to focus. Ah, a Wookiee. He knows this one. Subject 6391A. Designation Cracktooth. She once tried to bite her way through shackles, which broke most of her teeth. She learned the hard way that escape was not an option. And since then, she's been one of the most docile beasts in all of Tolruk's fortress. He uses her for more delicate matters. Gardening, cleaning, putting up tents. She's often nearby, and she never turns her gaze to him. Cracktooth is very respectful. Very respectful. She reaches in, her hands closing around his neck. Cracktooth bares her yellow teeth. She snaps his neck like a bird bone. So ends Lozen Tolruk.
Interlude. Duropolis. Hosnian Prime.
All right, Mr. Hetkins. Lean forward and step down,
Dr. Arsad says.
Gently, gently, left leg first,
she adds. Dade screws up his face and eases forward off the bed. He does as she says, left leg first. As for the second leg, well, that one's gone. Blown clean off back in the thicket of Endor. He and his team were doing cleanup in the weeks after the Death Star's destruction, tracking down ragtag Imperial battalions that never made it off the surface of the Sanctuary Moon. All it took was one. One scout trooper. A scout trooper with a box of thermal detonators and the willingness to use them. Then, boom. A crater in the ground vomited fresh dirt. It rained down around him as he fell, clutching the spot where the right leg below his knee once was. Then, darkness took him. Thankfully, triage saved his life, if not the leg. And now he's here, at a New Republic vet hospital on Hosnian Prime. Living the dream, he thinks.
Go on,
Arsad says. She's an older woman, with lines drawn in her skin, deep enough they're like a knife carving a name into dark wood.
Yep. Yeah,
he says, and eases forward. The prosthetic foot clicks against the ground, and awareness blooms in the soul of the metal foot. It isn't his flesh and blood. He can feel it connect with the floor. It doesn't feel the same as the other foot. This is cold and electric. He hates it. His new toes drum impatiently, even angrily on the floor, as Arsad asks him to hold still. Nearby, an FX-7 droid's dozen spindly limbs furiously tap buttons on a diagnostic machine while also measuring and examining a scrolling holographic readout beamed above. The droid whirs and beeps. She has him stand, then walk, then sit again, then stand again. Flex and stretch, move and pivot. The droid continues to work diagnostics.
Things look fine here, Dr. Arsad says.
Thanks, Doc. Guess I'm good to go. He stretches the leg out, and the crass facsimile of a half-leg hangs there like a curse. It shines. Red wires braid up through its pistons and screws.
I'm less than who I was before, he thinks.
An idle thought that causes anger to surge inside him like an eruption of hot lava. It's hard to swallow and force a smile, but he manages.
Not just yet, Arsad says. The leg is fine, but how are you?
Like you said, leg is fine, so I'm fine. But the way she looks at him is almost like she's looking through him, or rather seeing through his smokescreen.
Any bad dreams?
Nope, he lies. He doesn't flinch at remembering the one from just last night. Trapped in trees falling all around him. Hopping around on one bloody leg. The last man alive on a forest moon full of Imperials.
So you're sleeping okay?
Like a purrin Nexu. Another lie.
And no mood problems?
I definitely didn't kick a potted plant to death yesterday with my one good leg.
That poor little kaduki plant. All those crushed flowers. All that spilled dirt. Not that I can see.
Suicidal thoughts?
Zero. That at least is not a lie. He wants to live. He's just not particularly happy about it. The FX-7 warbles and buzzes. Arsad nods.
The droid suggests you are not being entirely truthful.
His eyes pinch shut. Droid traitor. He should have known that being hooked up to that thing gave a lot more bio and psycho feedback than he figured on. Listen, Doc, I'm fine. I'm good, okay? I got my leg. I learned to use it, no problem. As for the rest, I knew what I was signing up for. I didn't decide to go toe-to-toe with the Empire thinking it would be like riding the grav rails at Domino Park. I knew what could happen. I'm alive, and I'll take that as a blessing. Thank the Force.
And yet,
Arsad says, leaning in and watching him with those kind eyes,
Republic protocol demands I not let you leave without some help.
Don't need help. Leaving is help enough.
Been in this hospital for 2 months now.
She hits the button, and the auto blinds rise, letting light in from the hospital courtyard. Outside, Alliance vets sit on the benches or move about on hover chairs, many tended to by FX droids. Beyond that are the crystal dunes on the outskirts of the city, on which sit dome-style Hosnian homes.
There we go. Let a little light in. We all need light.
That feels like a precursor to something.
I have 2 prescriptions for you. First is that you return here every month for group therapy. Other combat veterans gather here and talk about what they've seen and what they're feeling. It helps.
He laughs, though it isn't a happy sound. Doc, I wasn't planning on sticking around. I was thinking of going back to the NR, doing another tour. Maybe something in the Outer Rim, I don't know. Now it's her turn to laugh.
Oh, Dade, no. Your time at war is done. For you, it's peacetime, if you let it be. Now, if you want to leave Hosnian Prime, we can set you up with a therapy group on other worlds. Chandrila, Corellia. The light of the Republic reaches new worlds every day now.
He bites his lip. Okay, fine. I'll talk to a bunch of scarred-up old battle idiots like me. Are we good?
As I said, there is a second thing. Wait here, please.
As if he's going to just get up and run laps. A mischievous twinkle shines in her eye as she leaves. Dade sits there for a while, tapping his new metal toes on the floor. Click, 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 click. When she returns to the room, a droid follows close behind. This droid is unlike one he's ever seen before. It's got a clunky, squarish head, but it rolls around slowly on a blue and gold ball-shaped body. Smaller than your standard astro droid, this one only sits about knee-high. It warbles and blurps at him, focusing a pair of ocular lenses on him as it juggles its own head, which sits improbably upon its body like a box balanced poorly on a child's ball. The droid tries to stay balanced as its head dips dangerously to one side. What is this? He asks.
It's a droid, Dade.
Yeah, Doc. I see that, but why is there a droid here?
This is QT-9. He is your droid.
Dade arches an eyebrow so high, he's pretty sure it hovers a few centimeters above his head. I don't recall owning a droid.
Think of it as renting one, except for free. QT-9 is a prototype therapy droid.
I don't want, whatever that is. Arsad smirks.
I could put you in for a therapy Ewok instead. Some of the native Endor creatures have agreed to travel off-world to help veterans like you recuperate, as a manner of recompense for saving their home.
Oh, yeah. I don't want one of those. They smell horrible.
Good news, then. The droid smells clean as new metal, in part because it is new. With the Empire falling, opportunity arises across the galaxy for new technologies, droids included. This one is designed to be friendly and familiar, like a pet.
The droid rocks back and forth, purring. He sighs. I have to take the droid. For real?
And come to meetings.
Doc, you're killing me.
I think you mean, Doc, you're saving my life.
If you say so. She holds his hand and clasps it tight.
I do say so, Mr. Hatkins. I do. Congratulations on your new foot, your new droid, and your new lease on life. The galaxy is yours to conquer.
Thanks for your help, I guess. Dr. Arsad hugs him, then leaves him alone with the droid. Dade stretches and groans as he stands fully. Again, he feels the floor up through his clearly fake foot. Nearby is the silica-form sleeve, a.k.a. skin sock, that she told him he could pull over it if he wanted to. But honestly, he'd rather just have a weird metal foot. Why pretend? He leaves it behind. QT-9 makes a string of trill beeps at him. He just shakes his head and says, "Come on, you roly-poly pain in my butt. Let's go home." Whatever that is. The droid squeals with robot delight as it trails behind. Chapter 31. Dreams. Leia knows she's just dreaming. She recognizes them for the illusion that they are, but they trouble her just the same, threading in and out of her sleep. Phantasms pursue her. She dreams of Han,
dead in the snow. She dreams of poor Chewie in a cage somewhere. She dreams of herself on a table, dying as her child, no, children are born. Then comes a vision of Luke, lost among the stars, searching for something and failing, never returning. She dreams of being lost in a forest, and then of being lost inside the Death Star. She and Luke and Han are fleeing stormtroopers, trying desperately to get back to the Falcon after Obi-Wan powers down the tractor beam controls, but now she knows the dead truth. He failed. He died, and the ship is still anchored there. And even if they could find their way out of the tangle of passages, they'll never escape, and... Her stomach twists, not an alarming pain, but a kick from the child inside her. She has to sit up. Her brow is slick with sweat. The bed beneath her is too. Her hand moves to her belly and feels the shape there, shifting and stirring. He's hungry. Which means she's hungry, too. But then, a shape in the doorway. It's T2LO, one of her attendant protocol droids.
Your Highness,
the droid says.
I know that it's late.
It's late, L.O.
Yes, Your Highness, I believe I noted that. Well, you have a visitor.
At this hour?
The droid nods.
It is a man named Condor Kyle.
She explains.
He said you would want to.
The slicer.
Let him in, L.O. I'll be out in a moment.
Leia takes a moment to center herself. She puts on a robe and washes her face, then heads out to meet her guest. Condor Kyle is scruffy, but in a particularly groomed way. It seems a controlled chaos. His clothing is modern. Very modern, even by Chandrillan styles. A long dark vest with exposed arms and narrow leg leather pants. He stands as she enters.
General Leia,
he says.
That word makes you nervous, General.
It's just, I'm not military.
I know. I hired you, remember?
An embarrassed smile as he says,
Yes, of course, Your Highness.
It's funny meeting like this. Late at night, in secret. Reminds her of the rebel days. Except now, she's hiding from her own government.
You have news?
I do.
He sets up a small tripod in the center of the table, its metal legs clicking into place. The holoprojector immediately casts an image of the Wookiee planet Kashyyyk.
The probe droid recorded this.
Information on Kashyyyk has been incredibly hard to come by. It is a walled, protected world. The Empire has it in a chokehold. But she hoped a small probe droid could escape their sweeps. And so she hired Condor, a friend she understands of Nora, to build a probe designed for stealth and capable of slicing into Imperial frequencies, and further, recording something to give her a sense of what's going on there. Most of its data has been orbital and atmospheric, though it has a long-range sensor cam that can take satellite images from above. She watches the three-dimensional scene unfold. It flickers blue as three Star Destroyers move together and begin...
Oh,
she says, her hand flying to her face. Orbital strikes. They're going to bomb the planet into submission. But why? Condor must anticipate that question coming, because he turns off the image, then plays an audio file.
The probe intercepted this burst of calm traffic from the surface. Lozen Tolrok sent it. I don't know why he failed to encrypt it, but the droid was able to pick it up.
The man's voice appears from the projector, accompanied by a visualization of the spikes and dips of the sound waves.
The terrorists have won, Admiral Orlan. The inhibitors are down. The animals are...
His voice slurs when he says this next bit.
Escaping the zoo. Bomb it all. Burn it to a cinder. Uploading authorization code now. Begin orbital campaign.
The voice cuts out. She takes a moment to process. Han did it. He must have. If anyone could cause an overreaction like bomb the whole planet into bits, it'd be him. But now what? An orbital bombardment will be a nasty, protracted campaign. It won't stop until most of that world is dead. And that means Han and the others cannot escape. They could die there. This is it. This has to stop now. The course of action she decided upon after her meeting with Mon Mothma can no longer wait until after Liberation Day. Even though the celebration is tomorrow, every moment counts. She must not waste them. Thank you, she says. I'll have the credits transferred to your account immediately.
Nah, he says, waving it off. Let's call this one a freebie.
I owe you credits, Condor.
Slate's clean. You can pay next time.
Thank you.
Mind if I ask, what are you going to do, Your Highness?
I'm going to do what every wife must do now and again, she says. I am going to go rescue my husband.
Grand Admiral Sloan cannot sleep. Tomorrow is the first day of the peace talks. Worry threatens to eat her up from the inside.